I'd like to begin this morning by reading to you from the Word of the Lord, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24 to 27. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. This scripture here, the Apostle Paul, he is writing in the first century to the Roman culture in the Roman Empire, which was an empire that was well known for its athletic competitions. It was the breeding ground for the Olympics. And Paul here, he's speaking into that culture in a language they can understand. He's speaking to them about athletic competition, and he's comparing the illustration of the training of an athlete to the training of a Christian and of the Christian life. And I think in a very similar way, we need to realize that as Christians, we are in training. We are running a race. We are fighting a fight. But at the same time, I think it's important to mention something. It's something I mentioned earlier in the series. I talked a lot about it. I think it's due for a mention again. And that is that there is a distinction between effort and earning. And certainly the gospel is not opposed to effort, but it is opposed to earning. At the end of the day, by working and trying really hard, we do not earn our salvation, my friends. God loves us the same, whether we succeed or whether we fail. It is not our efforts which justify us before God, but it is His efforts through His very own Son, Jesus Christ, and what He did for us on the cross. It is that which paved the way to Him and that which earned it all for us, and we are recipients of that grace. Yet in the same breath, I tell people, how can you stand before God on that very day and say that you love Him when you haven't lived your life according to Him? When you haven't lived your life in a way that exemplifies someone who's in love with Jesus and has really received that gift. I say, can you do that? Would you be able to stand before Him on that day? I think it's our actions that are the fruit and prove that we really do love Jesus and have a relationship with Him. Are you saved through Jesus? Yes. But I do believe the Bible provides no great confidence to the salvation of those who do not live a life in obedience to Him. So that being said, Christian training is a real thing and is important. It is similar to athletic training, but also different because we don't go through physical training and we don't do physical disciplines. We do spiritual disciplines. And spiritual disciplines are what we've been talking about through this series. And so I want to just take a look at the nature of spiritual disciplines right now and how that aligns with physical disciplines. First of all, I want to talk about spiritual disciplines and how they're not accomplished overnight. Like, it's not a short road. You don't master them overnight, right? Just like physical training, right? I think a lot of people, they start spiritual disciplines and they try a few here and there for a little bit and then they give up because it's hard and they get frustrated and they don't really see any immediate change and so they just put it aside, right? Maybe that's you. That's certainly been me sometimes in the past. Maybe you relate to that. I often think of it's kind of a little bit like squash. I play squash. You probably have no idea what that is. It's a sport, yes, as well as a fruit, or should I say a vegetable. Maybe Zach can clarify that for me since he's quite a bit of a chef. But I'm not sure what it is. But it is a sport that one plays. It is a thing, and you play it with two rackets in a small room. It's not racquetball, though. Can I clarify that? Don't call it racquetball. That offends me. It's like if I called you American. I get that you're similar to Americans, but you're not Americans, so it's squash. But I digress. Squash is one of those sports that it takes a long time. It's not easily, you know, picked up on. Like, even if you're a natural athlete, it's sort of counterintuitive. So it takes a lot of time and energy over a long haul to become good at this sport. And so by the nature of squash, a lot of people, they just give up very easily and they never actually make it to a high level, or they just give up on it because it's too difficult. In fact, myself, sometimes I've vowed to quit the sport. You know, maybe you can relate to that, like golf. You know, it can be very frustrating at times, and you vow to give up, and then you go back at it. And sometimes it's even felt like I was regressing in the sport, right? Because I couldn't see the results of my efforts in the short term. But often it showed itself when I would play someone who I hadn't played for like a really long time. And we'd get together and I would often do much better against that person than I did, let's say, a year prior. And it would become very evident both to that person and to me right away that I had made improvements. And that being said, I think our faith is very similar in that when we engage spiritual disciplines, we don't always see the results in the short term, right? But it's refining our souls. And that takes time, and it's a slow process, and something you can't see right away. In fact, you may even feel like you're regressing sometimes in your faith, even though you might be practicing regular spiritual disciplines. But over the long haul, you will see the difference it makes. Actually, you know, God just brought this to my mind, but I remember it was like a few days ago, Lacey, me and you were having a conversation, remember, about how we've grown and how our relationships changed over the years. And I said, how have I changed? Because I talked about some ways you changed, and I won't share those. All for the better, of course. Your face has changed. And she said, you know, well, these are some things. Like, you're much less angry. You know, you're much calm, more patient, gentle person. And I was like, those are specific ways in which I've been praying. Those are specific ways in which I've done spiritual disciplines. A lot of my spiritual disciplines, in times where I've come to God, said, you've got to help me with this. And it showed itself over many years. But you won't notice it in the interim. And the same is with spiritual disciplines. They become evident over the long haul. Secondly, spiritual disciplines are not easy. They are not easy. It's been said there's no shortcuts to any place worth going. And I believe that. When it comes to our faith journey, when it comes to being more like Jesus, the truth of the matter is spiritual disciplines are the path there, but that's not an easy path. And where we're going, godliness, there is no shortcut. There is no shortcut to godliness. As Jay Adams once said, the word discipline has disappeared from our minds, our mouths, our pulpits, and our culture. We hardly know what discipline means in modern society, and yet there is no way to attain godliness other than this. Discipline is the path to godliness. My friends, spiritual disciplines, they ain't quick and they ain't easy. But I want us to realize that the prize that we get at the end of that journey is more than worth it. It's more than worth the training. Just remember the words of Paul that we read. He said, everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Or consider Paul's words to Timothy in 2 Timothy. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day. And not only to me, but also to those who all have longed for his appearing. My friends, I'm not going to lie to you. There's no quick or easy way to righteousness. There's no quick or easy way to godliness. And spiritual disciplines are not easy. And sometimes they even feel a little bit burdensome, dare I say. Spiritual disciplines, they take time and energy, and they may not always be what we want to do, but they're necessary for the path ahead. Do you think every athlete loves doing like hundreds of sit-ups and push-ups? Do you think people like doing heavy deadlifts and squats? Well, apparently Zach does, but that's an anomaly. Most people do not like doing those kinds of things. I mean, who likes eating broccoli? Well, okay. Maybe you don't understand how these sermons work. Wait, this is a rhetorical question. Rhetorical meaning that the answer is implied, and the answer that is implied is nobody. So please put your hands down. That's why we video this. No one can see the hands go up. Actually, April likes broccoli. But the point I'm trying to make is that sometimes we don't like to do these things, but they're necessary. Right? They're necessary in order to reap the reward, and the reward that we have at the end of this is more than worth it. A great example of this is the Aesop fable known as the heifer and the ox. So the story goes that one day there was a heifer and an ox, and they used to live side by side, and all day long the ox would work and he would labor with a heavy yoke around his neck, but the heifer would dance around and play and eat grass and do whatever he wanted. And he would always mock the ox for working hard and subjecting himself to the yoke of labor. But then one day there was a festival in the town, and the ox, he got a holiday and he was well fed, but the heifer, he was led away to be slaughtered for the festival. And as he's being led away, the ox says to him, "If this is the reward for your idleness, then I think my work is more rewarding than your play. Indeed, I'd rather have my neck feel a yoke than an axe." What greater analogy than for the Christian life? Spiritual disciplines, they can feel sometimes restrictive, right? Unliberating, burdensome, right? They can feel that way sometimes. But my friends, they are the path to godliness. And if we do them, we will have beautiful souls and we will reap the rewards if we do not give up. And the discipline I want to talk about today is really no exception to that. It's a discipline that I think is very countercultural. It's not emphasized a lot. Therefore, all the more necessary and all the more impactful in our lives. And that, of course, is the discipline of silence and solitude. Silence and solitude are complementary disciplines, right? Because, you know, people treat them as separately. I treat them kind of together because it's hard to have kind of one without the other. And they're supportive disciplines because they support the other spiritual disciplines. Like when you have silence and solitude, you tend to be able to do the other spiritual disciplines with more effectiveness. For instance, prayer and reading your Bible, those are two spiritual disciplines. And you can do those on the bus and train when you're commuting to work. And I'm sure many of you do. Many of you have shared with me you do that. And that's all well and fine. But imagine if you were to practice prayer and reading your Bible in conjunction with silence and solitude. Chances are you would have more focus and you would probably get more out of those disciplines. And so such is the nature of silence and solitude. They are sort of a foundational spiritual disciplines that give rise to the other ones. And like all spiritual disciplines I've been talking about thus far in the series, it is very countercultural, right? Which is one of the reasons we need all the more to have the spiritual discipline of silence and solitude. It takes no genius to realize that we live in a culture that is more saturated, more inundated with noise and distraction than any culture before in history. There's a guy by the name of Bernie Krause, and he records nature sounds for a living. And he claims that back when he started recording, back in 1968, that in order to get 1 hour of natural, like undisturbed sound, 1 hour like free of cars or planes or any kind of noise, artificial noise, it took him about 15 hours of recording. He says that today it takes him on average 2,000 hours of recording time to get that same 1 hour of uninterrupted nature sounds. With inventions like the smartphone, enormous access to the internet everywhere we go, advancements in batteries and devices and things like that, it seems as though we have unlimited access to content and media and entertainment, and there's so much out there that there is this sort of fear, I think, of missing out, and this overwhelming inundation and pressure we feel to be involved with all these things. Yet there's less pressure for silence and solitude than there ever has been before. And I think sometimes media and those things, it wins out and silence and solitude gets pushed out. It seems like nothing seems to bother us more in this society than like pauses or silence or emptiness, like empty space. I mean, we always had things like awkward silences, but what I found is that, and that's why we call it awkward silence, because it feels awkward to Canadians. I think other cultures just call it silence. But we call it awkward silence. And what I have found is, and I may be off on this, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the time it takes for a silence to be considered awkward is becoming less and less all the time. I remember when I first took my first class on preaching, the professor taught what he called pause for effect, right? So I don't do pause for effect because I think today it's more like pause for distraction. And so that's why I talk so quickly in my sermons, because I know I'm just going to lose you. You know, there's birds here and I got to bring in. And so see, it's changed, right? Things have changed even in the last 20 and 30 years. It is an influence from our culture, but we need to realize it's not biblical. The Bible paints a different picture of silence and solitude, not of an awkward silence, but of a necessary silence. Right? It paints silence and solitude as something that should be respected and should actually be a part of our regular daily rhythms and routines. Now, you may be thinking to yourself at this point, well, you know, Keith, easy for the Bible to say. Realize the Bible was written 2,000 years ago and things are a lot different. What can that speak to me? Well, listen, I get that you feel like you're busy and there's so many distractions and things coming your way that there's no way you could incorporate silence and solitude. But listen, there is nobody in all of history that was more busy or more distracted. And by distracted, I mean inundated with expectations and demands of other people than Jesus. He had the most demands and he was the busiest. I mean, just think about it. When you have the power to instantly heal anybody of any disease in a day when there's no modern medicine or healthcare system, people are pretty demanding of your time, you know? And people were always doing this, yet Jesus always seemed to find time to steal a little bit away for solitude. We read about one of these examples in Luke chapter 4. At sunset, the people brought to Jesus all who had various kinds of sicknesses. And laying his hands on each one, he healed them. Moreover, demons came out of many people, shouting, "You are the Son of God." But he rebuked them and would not allow them to speak, because they knew he was the Messiah. At daybreak, Jesus went out to a solitary place. The people were looking for him, and when they came to where he was, they tried to keep him from leaving them. It's an interesting story, isn't it? Here we see Jesus. He's had an exhausting day of ministry. And he gets up at the crack of dawn and he just wants to steal away a little bit of solitude. And the people, they pursue him and they track him down. Right? No one was more inundated by distractions than Jesus was. But he was able to find time. And he purposely, intentionally went out to pray and to be with the Lord. And Jesus, we know, he's our perfect example. He's example of the perfect human. And he's the example that we are to follow. If Jesus can do it, I think so can we. But before I close, I just want to touch on a few words about the how, you know, because I think this is a question we're probably answering or at least asking right now. Is how do we actually go about practically, I mean, 21st century, living out this discipline of silence and solitude? And one of the things I think we need to realize right off the bat is one of the biggest obstacles, or at least for me, about practicing silence and solitude is that I somewhat feel as though it's a bit of a waste of time. I mean, believe me, I'm busy. You know, I used to think I was busy, then I had kids, and now I think I'm really busy. But there's always time, right? There's always time. And my time is my most valuable resource. And so when I think about spending 20 minutes just by myself, like with nothing, it does seem like a bit of a waste of time to me. And so one of my suggestions would be utilize some of your downtime or some of the time you use for menial tasks and try to take that and redeem that time for the Lord. So, for example, maybe time in the shower. You know, for most of us anyways, it's a solitary place, right? So you're all by yourself. So instead of planning things or thinking about what you're going to have for dinner, use that time and dedicate it to the Lord and spend time inviting him into that space and listening to him. I can remember one time, I try to practice this regularly, and one time I practiced this, and the Lord spoke to me very clearly, and he told me to go do something. So that day I went out, and I did that thing which he told me to do, and a year ago I got an email from a guy, a year after I had the conversation with him, that the thing that I told him, that God told me to do, was so impactful to him that a year later he was still reaping the benefits of that in his life. My friend, so, you know, God can speak to us in the silence and solitude, which is the discipline of receiving guidance that we talked about in previous weeks. And things like that can happen even when we steal a few moments in the shower. And so whether you're driving your car or making lunches or doing the dishes, think about just maybe turning off the background noise. Turn off the podcast, turn off the music, and just invite God into that space. Or take this. At night, just choose to watch one less show. I mean, most of us watching shows, it's low down the priority list, like in terms of things we need to do and things in our lives. And so if you just watched one less and you took that time and instead spent it in silence and solitude, you would really benefit from refining your soul, and you wouldn't really be missing anything. I mean, no one really feels bad or guilty because they missed, you know, another show or something like that. I can remember me and Lacey discovered this about several years ago now. We were in a small group and we were studying spiritual disciplines. And it was a challenge in the workbook to unplug for a week. So that meant for us no TV, no video games. I don't even think cell phones were a thing back then. No, they weren't. So we didn't struggle with that, but no TV and no video games. And one thing we discovered that stuck with us through that whole practice was that we have a lot more time than we think. You know, I remember thinking like we had no time, like we were struggling with spiritual disciplines because we were like, when am I going to do that? And then when you couldn't watch TV and you couldn't play video games or anything like that, it was like, oh, you'd be surprised at how much filler time you have that you put other things in. But I know you might be thinking, Keith, listen, you don't understand. You know, I have no opportunity. Okay, I'm a full-time mom, or I'm a full-time student, or I'm a full-time, you know, whatever. You just don't get it. There's literally, I have no space in my life. I go from one thing to the next to the next. Well, it's true. I don't know what you're going through. I don't understand your situation. It's certainly not my situation. The story I shared, yes, was before we had kids. But I am reminded of the story, a very famous story about a woman by the name of Susanna Wesley. She was the mother of the very famous John and Charles Wesley. And she had like 12 kids or something like that. I mean, this was back in like Pilgrim days. So she had like lots of kids. But she literally could not get any physical isolation. Like, it just wasn't an option for her. But she had this practice, and she would take her apron and she would put it up over her head and she would read her Bible and pray underneath that. And the kids knew that when mom has the apron over her head, you do not talk to mom because mom is meeting with God, and that's very important. And so the younger ones would take care of the older ones would take care of the younger ones, and they would just get by. The very famous A.W. Tozer, who I've been quoting a lot through this series, he was a very famous Alliance pastor, pastored in Toronto. He used to go to the furnace room, for lack of a better place. You know, the furnace room, but he found some place. And I think the practice of having a dedicated place where you can go and just be by yourself with the Lord that's consistent, that's invaluable. I mean, whenever you read the saints and they talk about the spiritual disciplines, they often talk about having a place you go, like a prayer chair or a prayer closet where you can go and meet with the Lord, and it's the same, and it's a place that means something to you. I can remember when I first preached on this subject many years ago, I was convicted by this, and I thought about this, and I thought, is there any place? And I started reflecting on all the places in my life, and I realized that we have a walk-in closet, and in our walk-in closet, the clothes hang high, but below, beneath the clothes, there's this empty space. And I thought to myself, you know what, even Superman has a fortress of solitude, and he's the most righteous superhero out there, right? Like, he's a noble, upright man, and it's probably because of this fortress of solitude. So I said, I need a fortress of solitude. So I went home, and I got some blankets and pillows, of course, because that's necessary for any fortress of solitude. I got a little lamp, and I kind of hunkered down, and I made that my sort of prayer closet. And I would go there, and that's a place where I could steal some time away from the kids, because I did have kids at this time. And I would go, and I would write scriptures on the wall, which I recommend doing in washable, because when I moved, I had to take that off, and it was very difficult. And there's no clothes, so you can't hide it. Anyways, but I had that place, and it was so good for me to have that place when I really needed to meet with God, or even just, you know, week to week that I could go and just be and have my own space, and it had the scriptures on the wall, and it meant something to me. And if you don't have a place like this, I would really encourage you to try to go and find a place like that, kind of your happy place to be with the Lord. Just one last story. My dad, he attended Beulah Lions for many years, ever since he became a believer in his 40s. And he doesn't have the gift of, you know, leadership or worship or anything like that. But he has the gift of woodworking. I think it's the same spiritual gift that Jesus had. And so he would build the Christmas sets every year for their big Christmas play they would do. And so because of this, he got access to the backstage, and he would go into all the nooks and crannies of the church. And one day he told me that he came across this room, tucked in the back of the church, a small little room, and inside there was nothing but a solitary chair. And when he told me that, right away I knew what it was. It was a fortress of solitude. And I felt like the Lord told me at that time, this is one of the reasons of the success of the church. As you may know, Beulah Alliance, one of the biggest Alliance churches in Canada, and one of the largest churches in Edmonton as a whole. And they have a senior pastor who's been there for like over 20 years. He's a great man of God, leads the people with a wonderful like commitment to the Lord. And you know, as goes the pastor, so goes the church. And I really felt like that was his place, his fortress of solitude, his furnace room, so to speak, that he would go and be with the Lord. Although don't quote me on that because I don't know that for sure, but this is a hunch that I have anyways. So you see, my friends, the spiritual disciplines of silence and solitude are so essential for paving the path to godliness and for running the race for which we will reap a reward someday. For many of us, it seems impossible or unreachable, but I think it's much more reachable than many of us think. It just takes a little persistence and perhaps a little creativity. And so right now, I would like to just give you some space to actually practice that, experience some silence, so to speak. We can't have solitude, but we can have some silence. I like to give us time to actually practice, you know, what I'm preaching in the services, because sometimes I think if you just go away, you start talking about the weather and you get distracted and you never do it. So I want to give you a taste of what it would taste like to have silence. And so we're going to show a video and I want you to watch it with me. It's silent. I know it confused the sound guys this morning. It's like, there's no sound. And I said, there's not supposed to be any sound. There's no sound. And I just encourage you to sit in the silence and just enjoy the silence. And then we're going to have about a minute of silence after the video. And then we're going to come up and close us in a word of prayer.